Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit with me, Kathy Brodie of kathybrodie.com. In this summit, we're going to be exploring children's personal, social and emotional development, and especially strategies for helping children in this key area of development. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Dr. Sue Allingham. She's a consultant, author and trainer, and she's well known through her writing for the Early Years Educator magazine, the iMagazine that we all know, where she's also a consultant editor. Sue's written the book, Transitions in the Early Years, a practical guide to supporting children between early years settings and into Key Stage 1, and that's published by Practical Preschool. Supporting developmentally appropriate practice is a particular interest, and Sue runs projects working with Year 1 teachers to create effective teaching and learning environments. She's been fully trained in using the Leuven Scales for well-being and involvement, and this is the area that we're going to investigate today. Welcome to the Early Years Web Summit, Dr. Sue Allingham.
Thank you very much, Kathy. It always sounds really odd when people introduce me as Dr. Sue Allingham. You sound like a medical practitioner, but thank you for that.
You're very welcome. I shall refer to Sue now.
Thank you.
So the Leuven Scales, I love the Leuven Scales, and I use them a lot when I do training, and certainly when I'm teaching at university, we talk about them and refer back to them a lot. However, there may be people out there who haven't come across the Leuven Scales before. So first of all, can you just tell me a little bit about what they are?
I think that's a really interesting point when you say that people have heard about the Leuven Scales, and in fact, probably over the last couple of years, the Leuven Scales have been bandied around as if they're something that everybody has heard of. Mm. Well, they have now, but whether they actually understand what they really are is another question. Yeah. About 10, maybe 12 years ago, I first met Farah Lavers, who was the person to first develop the idea of the scales for well-being and involvement. Mm. And basically, you have two sets of scales that work on a 5-point system. So you have the well-being scales and you have the involvement scales. Mm. Now, these are put into all sorts of assessment regimes these days, notably the type that you do on iPads.
Yeah.
And also they're used in baseline assessments too. Professor Love has realised that if you don't have a good sense of well-being that he refers to as feeling like a fish in water, then actually your involvement in any kind of deep level learning isn't going to really happen. Mm. And we can really, we were talking a bit just now about internets and driving and things like that. Mm. And we don't necessarily all know what's going on with that. And if we're very tense and the internet goes wrong or the driving goes wrong and we don't understand why, our well-being is shot to pieces, therefore we can't get involved in understanding what's going wrong.
Yeah.
And if you look if you watch young children, if they aren't feeling cared for and loved and understood, then they're not going to be really listening to you when you're trying to teach them a new subject. Mm-hmm. Really, I suppose if you think about it, it's the Maslow's hierarchy, isn't it? If we don't have our basic psychological needs met, we're not going to fulfill our full self and develop self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So Professor Lavers-Ferrer realised that you could actually sit down and, if you like, monitor children's well-being. Mm. And I don't like the word grade or level, but effectively that's what it is, mm, against 5 scale points. And then depending on where that child is on the 5 points for well-being, you know how involved they're going to be in their learning. Mm,
mm.
It's very much more complicated than that, but that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, so it's almost like a quick reference guide. So rather than having to have a massive paragraph about this is what the child's doing, you can kind of say, well, they were about midway on the scales, or they were very high in their level, mm, of involvement. Mm. It's a really nice little shortcut way of condensing all that information. But as you say, it's not as simple as that, is it? There's a lot more that goes on behind all the scales. Mm.
You and I both know what we're talking about here. Mm. But for people who haven't had a background training on it, it's not quite so obvious. Mm. For example, I always say to people, you can't really do the involvement scale unless you've looked at the well-being scale.
Because so you would start at the well-being scale.
Always. I would always start. You might notice a child's not involved, but that's probably, I would probably guarantee that that's more to do with the fact that they haven't got established well-being yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all have days where we're not involved in things, don't we? And we really can't find the flow to quote, was it Csikszentmihalyi, isn't it?
Yeah.
We can't find our flow. We all have days like that. But if you've got a child who's consistently not involved in their learning, then you would go straight to well-being and start unpicking that. Mm. But really, from my point of view, because PSED is my main interest and I've done a lot of work with early years into year one, as you said earlier, I would always walk into any setting and look at how I feel about the well-being in there. And it's not just about the children. I always advocate that all of this well-being involvement stuff you can do with the adults as well. So if I'm ever doing any kind of PSED training, I always talk about whenever we say, look at the child, look at the adults as well.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And I'm just thinking about settings I know where there is high level of involvement. The adults are highly involved as well. You can't have high level involvement of the children if the adults are just stood around doing nothing.
No. And sadly, that does happen in a lot of settings that I visit.
Yeah.
And also, people, I think people miss or don't put a lot of store in empathy sometimes. And if a member of the team is really stressed, or something's gone wrong, or there's tension in the team, and I'm sure you've worked with teams where there's tension, as have I, that rubs off on the children. You can't pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
And so if you're not working with the well-being of the team, you're not really working with the well-being of the children.
Mm-hmm. So it is that whole holistic environment that's surrounding the child from the moment that they walk in as well, isn't it? Not just during small group activities. It's
absolutely
the time, isn't it?
It's the whole feeling of the room. I do a lot of work around the emotional environment as well as the physical environment. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me move on a little bit to the emotional environment as well then. So that's a little bit about how we can use the Leuven scales to assess, and how on the 5 points we can kind of say this is where they are on those 5 points, and starting off with the well-being. So once we've made that kind of assessment, well, that's one way of using that assessment, how can we use the Leuven scales to actually support emotional development in children?
Well, that's really a really important part of the process, and Ferrer has what he calls the POM, the Process Oriented Monitoring System, because if you don't get the process right, you can't get the monitoring right. So he has what he calls the 10 action points for making your environment more emotionally, if you like, friendly for the child to become involved in. And actually, in early years, it's basic stuff that we know about the enabling environment. And, you know, having the areas of interest, having the comfort areas, making sure there's enough room, things like that, bringing in objects of interest that might be a bit different. Some of his older books talk about bringing in magicians and things like that, which is wonderful, but you don't do it every day. When I picture a kind of real well-being involvement, I tend to think about Reggio type areas.
Yes.
Really comfortable, not all singing, all dancing, covered in laminates and coloured pictures and hanging things, but a calming but very interesting and obviously emotionally stable and caring environment. So when we do work on the 10 action points for the children, it's about appealing. One of the words in the 10 action points is how the areas and corners are appealing.
Right, yeah.
It's not about covering them with coloured numbers and letters and alphabets.
Yeah, so you're talking about
actually,
it's appealing for the children, not appealing for the teacher's point that they want to put across.
Exactly, and it's keeping it real. People get very worried about how many letters and signs and things, and how do you hold your laminate pictures up on the walls outside and things. If you walked into a lovely garden, it wouldn't have laminated pictures all over it, would it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't at my house.
No. They certainly don't at the RHS gardens.
No, that's a very valid point.
Yeah.
So it's And always checking, of course, as well, that things are in good order.
Yeah.
Room awareness, environment awareness. Is there enough paper? Is it of good quality? It's basic stuff that actually we all know if we think about it.
Yeah.
But in the day-to-day running of a setting, sometimes it gets overlooked.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there are things on the floor and the pencils are broken and obvious stuff, but we really need to remember it, which is why, I mean, when you're doing Leuven work, you need to be thinking about the adults as well.
Right. So is that how, if you were going in to do some training, or if you were going into a setting as a consultant, is that how you would start? Would you start with the adults and look at where they are first and then go in and meet the children?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That, I mean, I've been in this sort of line of work for a long time in one form or another, but the first thing I do when I walk into any environment is register the feeling. Where are the adults? What are they doing? What are the interactions like? What are the children doing? And then I look at, so what is the environment like?
Yeah.
Actually, it could be the tattiest, most dilapidated scout hut in the universe that this setting is having to use, and it's not their fault, it's like it. Mm-hmm. But it could be the best playgroup in the world.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I certainly, I can think of several right now that have got the most lovely feeling when you come in and you're welcomed, and it's just great. But as you say, it's a pack away setting with things that are 30, 40 years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And other users of the hall don't treat things respectfully.
Yes, yes. So that sort of initial kind of take on the emotional environment is very important. Once you've kind of done that, how do we then work on that to make sure that it is a good emotional environment? How do we take those emotional environments that maybe are suffering? How do we then improve those?
I often have to get teams together, and sometimes there's some frank talking that goes on, which I'm sure you've had to experience before. Yeah. Earlier on, before we started, I was telling you a bit about my Tai Chi background.
Mm-hmm.
And I do some work with people, very basic stuff, because I'm not a Tai Chi teacher, but about taking time for yourself. Because with the best will in the world, when you're working with young children, you are flat out the whole time.
Yes.
True. And sometimes you're not feeling great, either physically or mentally, and it shows. However, if you went and took yourself away just quietly and sat on your own and did some breathing, or just switched off for a minute, you'd come back into that room feeling more refreshed, and it doesn't take long. So I've done some breathing work with people on courses before now, just to take that 5 minutes. And also I'm not quite sure how to put it. Start looking at things a little bit more objectively. Sometimes we get very closed in on things.
Yes.
And people get very het up and tied up with the routines of the day. Oh, it's 10:30, we have to be doing this, and it's 11 o'clock, we must be doing that. So we unpick rules and routines. And look at, actually, do we really need to do that when that time is? And just because it's always said on our day plan that we have story after snack, or that table goes here, does it really need to?
Yeah.
There's several reasons why my consultancy is called out of the box, and that is one of them. Because just because it's always been done like that doesn't mean it has to be done like that now.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's the management of the setting through just habit that causes the tension.
Yeah. And sometimes that's with the very best intentions as
absolutely.
Well. But, you know, and because it's worked for that particular cohort of children, or because that worked last year, then this, you know, we repeat the same things in the assumption we're going to get the same outcomes. But that reflective practice is so valuable, isn't it, for many
people. It's not easy for people.
No, really not.
And sometimes it takes a lot of talking to people and a lot of gaining trust with people.
Yeah. So that's a really good place for people to start. And I think that's a fantastic top tip already. Just stepping back, taking those few minutes, just have a little bit of deep breathing and just to reflect on what is going on. And maybe it's just standing in a corner for a minute and having a look around the room and just saying, what's actually happening here today? What is going on here? So I think that's a great place to start with those, with the well-being and with those sort of scales. And we've already said about how we need to get some of that foundation in place. What are the sort of challenges are they when you are using the Leuven scales?
Well, a major challenge, well, there are two really. One is that they're put out there, as I said earlier, on a lot of assessment tools, and people use them without really understanding what they're for or what they actually look like. The other one is personal opinion. And we get a lot of pressure. Quite a lot now when I run training courses, I problematize, if you like, the idea. And every so often all the way through, I say, well, what stands in the way of us doing it? And one of them that I throw up there is people's opinions of things. Mm. And we all know about looking at children with a halo and horns effect in our heads. And, you know, the beautiful blonde little girl is obviously the well-behaved, well-looked after, completely happy in her own soul body. Mm-hmm. And the dirty, grimy, runny-nosed little boy is clearly not, whereas it could be completely the other way around.
Yeah.
And that's why you really need to understand what well-being actually looks like in a sort of mental way rather than a physical way. Mm-hmm. And not just think, well, he's clearly got good well-being because he's involved in that. But what does involvement mean? Does it mean he's doing it because I told him to?
Yeah.
Or does it? So it's a personal opinion thing. And I think that's the biggest challenge with all of this stuff is the subjectivity. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a whole team understanding of just because he'll spend 10 minutes doing that puzzle because you told him to, doesn't mean he's highly involved in that puzzle.
Yeah.
You've got to really get it and really understand it. And that, I think, is sort of, it's kind of two challenges, but it's one as well. Unless you physically have done some work around this as a whole team and got a whole team feeling about what well-being is, therefore what involvement is, you're going to have, I don't know, 10, 12 different people in a team not really getting it and saying, well, he's obviously very involved in his work.
Yeah.
When he's not.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side of that, we all hear people talking about children flitting from activity to activity.
Absolutely.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But you really need to watch it to understand what's happening.
Yes, and have that understanding of why it is they're going from activity to activity. Mm. What is their thinking process?
Absolutely.
I always think it'd be a lot easier if we could actually see inside their heads. But
yes, quite.
We can't do that.
But we can make very informed thinking for ourselves. Mm. But you've hit on a really good one, that flitting, because so many times I've heard, and I've seen video clips used on training a long time ago towards foundation stage profile and moderation. And there were several people in the room that watched this child on a video clip moving from thing to thing all the way around the room and were very concerned about him. But my colleague and I watched it and we weren't concerned because of the way we felt. It's very difficult from a video clip where you don't know the children.
Yes, yeah.
But we overlaid a completely different story on it. Mm-hmm. And we weren't concerned about him. So that is the major challenge when using the scales, is not making those snap decisions.
You know, absolutely. And I think that links very closely with tuning into the children, understanding your children. You know, this child might constantly be highly involved, but today is involved in nothing, and that might sound the warning bells, even though that might be quite normal behaviour for a different child. So that tuning in is also quite important, isn't it, in understanding the children when you're using those.
Well, yes, because if you notice a child goes off for some reason, then you need to follow through and see. It might just be they've got a tummy ache that day.
Yeah. But You've got to, and that's part of the well-being, isn't it? That you've got to understand that's where they are on the well-being. And maybe that's, if the involvement scales are looking a bit strange for that child, to drop back into the well-being scales and say, right, let's just take this back and have a look, see where we're at well-being wise first.
And I think you've hit on a good point there as well. It's not, you use the Leuven scales, or Leuven scales rather, are a tool to be used. They aren't to be used the whole time, because they lose their efficacy if you're using them all the time for everything. But they are a very useful tool when you don't understand something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or for a specific group of children that you're working with. You can use them for a whole cohort of children if you want to. But then when you've done that initial assessment, if you like, then pull out a few you're concerned about working with. And then if a child suddenly does go off, like you say, and their involvement suddenly becomes different, use them again.
Yeah.
So that's a really important point about using them, is that you use them to suit an appropriate need.
Yeah. And I think that's actually essential to emphasise, because I don't think that's happening. I think, as you say, at the moment, it's sort of almost a box, isn't it, that you kind of fill in, or what's the number that we need to put in this box?
And it's it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And that's what concerns me about some of the electronic record keeping observation tools that you use on iPads and things. I am familiar with some of them that actually have a box for ticking off the well-being and involvement scales, and that's defeating the purpose, because you shouldn't need to be using them all the time.
It's understanding the assessment tools that you've been given, same exactly. as the profile and anything else that people are using around the world. Yeah, and I know that, having spoken to many people in different countries, that they have similar kind of issues, that they get given a set of guidelines and then suddenly almost like common sense goes out of the window, doesn't it? What the guidelines say, so this is what we've got to work towards. And it's like, no, you need to, that reflective practice again, really, isn't
it? It is, isn't it?
Back and put it in the hole.
And it is then that people suddenly say, well, we've got all these assessments to do and all this paperwork to do and all this and all that. And you think, well, no. And actually, it's very pertinent with Leuven scale work particularly, because you just end up with a set of numbers on a piece of paper every few weeks and it tells you nothing.
Yes, it doesn't give you that whole picture at all.
No.
About the child, yeah.
Not at
it's
all.
It's very important that we know what order to use them in, how we use them, and to actually understand them. And as you say, I think that takes training. I don't think you can just print them off and take them in. I think you do need a little bit of support and training on that, at least reading around it, if nothing else.
I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely. Yeah. And obviously, I've got a bit of background and I do a lot of training in it. From my point of view, talking with other people and coming to agreement about things is very important, which is what I meant about team understandings. You can't just give somebody a piece of paper with the descriptions and a chart of five numbers.
Yeah,
you have to really sit down and look at how Ferrer describes what the levels look like and how the children feel and the case studies, and
Yeah,
it's really important stuff.
Yes, and have that understanding as a team as to what's going on as well, and everybody brings their own experiences as well as their knowledge of their children.
Absolutely,
to that table, don't they? So we all have that little piece of the puzzle about that particular child, because we've all seen something different. And as I said before, we all interpret things differently as well. You know, your level of risky play can be very different to somebody else's. So
absolutely, that's a very good one to pick on.
Yeah, I've come across that a few times, and I think that. that team cohesion is so important, as you say, for the emotional well-being. Wow, there's loads of tips there already. So Sue, what would your absolute top tip or top strategy be for practitioners if they are wanting to work with the Leuven scales? What would your top tips be?
I think we probably covered them already, but my absolute top tip would be, first of all, get a decent book written by Ferrer and Julia Moons, one or the other or both, from Leuven University. Get some good background on it, and then if you can somewhere find some training on it, and obviously I can do it if people want to contact me, But get a good background on it. Local authorities run training. You can get packs with videos in, which are fine. Kent publishes stuff like that. I know you can buy those through various places. Be wary of what you read is all I will say, because social media and the internet are wonderful places. But if you want to know about this stuff, go back to source and read proper research documents.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of stuff out there that people write about and blog about and do stuff about that doesn't take it back to source and give you proper briefing on it.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the toppest tip, if you like. But also, as I said at the very beginning, it's not just about the children, it's about you. So you've got to go into this thing with an open mind and understand. Sometimes when I run training on this, I get people talking about how they feel when they arrive. Yeah. And I always have to give the health warning that this isn't a counselling session. I've had, on one notable occasion, somebody started telling me an awful story and I had to, I'm really sorry, but, you know, if you need to talk, I'm happy to talk afterwards in a private capacity. But this isn't the time to share this.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is about understanding how we feel about things and then really looking at how the children feel. So go to source and be ready to be reflexive about yourself.
Yes, yes, super. And as you say, you do whole team trainings through your out-of-the-box consultancy,
yes.
Don't you? And I have to say, I'm a big fan of whole team trainings. I think they're the way to go. I think that's there's nothing more demoralizing as a single practitioner coming back from a great course and you're the only one that's evangelizing. You need to have everybody on board.
Absolutely. And I do a lot of teams. I love working with nursery teams and things because they, as you say, they need to have the whole package, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Sue, that's been absolutely marvellous. The other thing I know that you're very involved with that I just want to touch on briefly before we go is the Keeping Early Years campaign. Tell people who maybe have been hiding under a rock and have not seen this. Can you tell them a little bit about what?
Okay, well, there are several thousand people already involved in this. Basically, in a nutshell, nearly 2 years ago, and a wonderful lady called Elaine Bennett, 2 years ago come Easter, decided she'd had enough of the way that early years was going in the world. She is an early years new one teacher herself. And contacted a few people that she knew names of, myself being one of them, to say, would I be interested in being part of this Facebook page, Keeping Early Years Unique, KEYU. And it's, I think the word is exponential. It's grown exponentially since she kicked it off. And it's really wonderful. There are six of us behind it now. There's myself, there's Kim Scott, Catherine Solly, Anna F. Grave, Ruth Moore, Elaine Bennett and Leah Morris. Don't know if that was six. And we've just done our third, I think it is, conference. We've done London, Leeds and Bristol. We're heading off to Dublin soon and we're doing Manchester and Birmingham.
Yeah.
Basically about the key principles of early years. What it's not, and we're finding this a lot, it's not a specific way of doing things. People are seeing it as a method, if you like, and is this the KEYU way? It's not a way, it's getting it back to basic principles.
Yeah.
So all of the founding fathers stuff, the, you know, the key principles of Isaacs and Froebel, and we're bringing it all back, all key early years stuff. So we do work on interactions and management. Obviously my stuff is a lot around transitions and personal, social and emotional.
Yeah.
It's key important early years stuff. So it's not a method, it's principles. So if you haven't found Keeping Early Years Unique Facebook page yet, as you said, they might have been under a rock. I think there's more than 20,000 people on it now.
Yes, and it's very active as well. There's always new,
massively active.
There's always things to read, yeah.
And there's always petitions to sign to Justin Greening about appropriate practice. And most importantly, as far as I'm concerned as well, it goes up to age 7.
Yes, yes, a proper early years stretch.
Early years. When I was first ever an early years coordinator 100 years ago, I was in charge of the infant department as well.
Yes.
As an early years coordinator.
Yeah.
And that seems to have slipped, doesn't it?
It does, and more so. It seems almost to be, certainly in England and in the UK, that the minute they get to school, the whole idea of early years just disappears, even though they might only be 4 years old, which is quite scary, actually. Yeah. The other thing that I like about keeping early years unique is that it doesn't matter whether you're in a Montessori setting or
not at all.
It's all really good practice, isn't it? Really good
childminders, everybody. It's early years principles.
Yeah.
The things that good early years practice is about.
And you'll find a link to the Keeping Early Years Unique Facebook on the website here, on the summit website. So you can just click through and have a read. As I say, there's always lots going on. So go and see what's happening on there now.
Definitely.
So, and hopefully we'll see a Keeping Early Years Unique book at some point as well.
Well, there is one underway.
Good, I can't wait. That is going to be excellent. I'm really looking forward to that. Sue, thank you so, so much for joining us today. It's just been a revelation, and I know that I'm going to be going back and having a look at some of my reading lists as well, and going back to source and getting some of that together. I think for practitioners out there, that's some really, really sound advice. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Early Years Web Summit.
Thanks, Kathy. It was a pleasure.
And thank you to our viewers and listeners today for joining us on the Early Years Web Summit.